The Health Equity Initiative is basically an effort to put conversations about health equity on our civic agenda. So oftentimes when we talk about health, people think about, I need to eat more fruits and vegetables, or I need to exercise more, or, when can I get into the doctor, or can I get to the doctor at all? But we really want our community to understand that health is really more than health care. It's really looking at, where people are on the socioeconomic ladder, racism, and other community conditions that actually determine health more probably than what you eat or, what you do as an individual.
Okay, now that you just said a lot of things right there, so we're going to have to unpack this a little bit. So, the first thing that I heard you say is sort of turning the issue a little bit on its head. That I think you, when I was found out you were a guest and thinking about it, Health Equity Initiative. This is probably talking about access to getting to a doctor's office, ability to pay for medication, but this is a much deeper issue.
It is. The United States spends over $2 trillion a year on health care. We spend more than any other industrialized country in the world on health care. And when you look at our health outcomes, you would expect that for that amount of money, we should, have the best health outcomes in the world. But we don't. In terms of our mortality rates and infant survival rates, we actually rank generally among the worst of the industrialized nations who tend to spend much less on health care than we do.
And so I think then that must get to this equity point of view, because certainly there's some people in this country who get excellent health care. Are they the ones who are in jeopardy of not being in excellent health? Is it that simple? Or
I think that what we are learning as a department and as a profession is that it's not just about whether you get excellent health care or poor health care, but all the way along the ladder, the lower amounts of money that you make, the worse your health outcomes are going to be in the United States. And if you add in race and racism on top of that, then it also affects your health negatively. And so it's not just about access to a doctor. Some of the other things that we have learned, and there have been studies that have shown this, is that even within our healthcare system, there are disparities. And so people of color tend to get worse healthcare within the hospital systems. So they might have less access to like pain medication, be less likely to get high-tech treatments, more invasive surgeries that require a longer recovery period. So there are just a whole bunch of equity issues that happen within healthcare systems, and yet that isn't even the full answer to our health, to having good health in our country.
one of the things that we were talking about before I walked in, I don't want to get too far ahead of the subject, but it's really stuck with me, is as you began to explain this to me, you were saying that in some ways, you're not necessarily putting yourself in better health by going to the gym than maybe by going to be engaged in some sort of political activity or social change to address these other issues. Tell me more about that. How does that work?
Well, there's a lot of information that suggests that poor health is really a result of chronic stress, of powerlessness, of feeling like you're not in control of your life. And so, if that is really at the root of poor health, then a pill's not going to make it better, and exercise is not going to make it better. But what's really going to make it better is the kind of work that happens by engaging in policy conversations, in organizing in communities, and really taking charge of your political context, of your, of the politics that circles your life. Because what we know is that people want to make healthy choices. It's just that sometimes there are policies or, stuff that's in place in our life that makes it really hard to make a healthy choice.
So I think that what we've begun to talk about and define here a little bit is the health equity. But the Health Equity Initiative, this is something that Multnomah County is launching. What's the goal of the initiative, and what will it look like for the people of Multnomah County?
Okay. So, well, let me just take a step back and just talk about, like, how did it start? The health department has been working for years on health disparities, particularly as they relate to race and ethnicity. So we know, and we have data that shows that, you know, in communities of color, there are worse health outcomes across a number of different health indicators. And we've been doing that work, and it, as health educators or community organizers, we know that it's really, there's like a point where it's really hard to go any further. Like, you can tell people what to do, but the context, the you know, the world that they live in often prevents healthy choices. So we've been doing the best we can. And what has happened recently is that with the election of our new Multnomah County Chair, Ted Wheeler, we now have some really strong political leadership from him and from the other county commissioners who are really interested in looking at what are those policy issues that prevent people or make it hard for people to make healthy choices.
Now, I know we still haven't talked about the initiative, and I'm about to ask a question that's going to take us further away from getting the initiative. For the benefit of our listeners, when you talk about a number of different health indicators, give some specific examples so people can understand some of the disparities that are common in our community.
Okay, so the health department looked at our data over 17 health indicators. And we looked at the data for African Americans, Hispanics, Asians, and Native Americans. And over those 17 indicators, what we saw was that among African Americans, there were disparities in 11 of those 17 indicators. And so I'm going to share just a little bit of the data. So the homicide death rate was 6 times as high for African Americans than white. Diabetes death rate for African Americans was more than twice that of white non-Hispanics. Stroke death rate for African Americans was 57% higher than the rate for white non-Hispanics. And there are other disparities as it related to lower prenatal care, low birth weight babies, teen birth rate. So really across the life cycle, there are health disparities that show up. In the Hispanic community or the Latino community, there were 5 of the 17 health indicators where there were disparities. And those included also like access to prenatal care, lung cancer deaths, diabetes deaths were higher than the white population. So those are just some specific examples.
So then... So let's get into the initiative itself. So Chair Wheeler is now in place, and he's saying, we've had this data, we've known it for a while, it's time that we actually dig our teeth into this mess and figure out what are we going to do.
And that's actually what he says, too. We know the data, we know that it exists, and we know that it's really about race and class. And so what the Health Equity Initiative is doing is focusing on engaging community and understanding what are the root causes of health disparities. And so to do that, we are screening a documentary called Unnatural Causes, Is Inequity Making Us Sick? And we're having these screenings around the community, which we can talk more about. And we'll follow the screenings with community conversations. So immediately following, you know, watching the movie, we'll talk about, you know, how do these issues that we see in this documentary, how do they play out in Multnomah County? And what does that look like in our community? And what are some ideas for ways that we can address them as individuals, as a county government, as community organizations, so that we can start to understand what are some possible solutions? We're also wanting to raise the visibility of current efforts to eliminate health disparities. So we know that there are a number of organizations who are doing health disparity work and a number of programs within the health department within the county. So we want to talk more about who those organizations are, make sure that they're getting the support that they need, because often our community-based organizations are operating on a shoestring. Mm-hmm. They're close to the community. They're doing great work, and we want to make sure that they get the support that they need. Mm-hmm. And then the third part of the initiative is to engage community members and policymakers in identifying what are some of the policy directions that we need to move forward on over the next period of time, 5 years, 10 years, to make sure that we have policies in place to promote health equity.
Wow. So this the Unnatural Causes documentary, about hour long, half hour long, or
the documentary, it's a 7-part documentary and it's 4 hours total. And so the way that it breaks down is the first part of the documentary is about an hour, and then each of the 6 other segments of the documentary are half an hour. So we'll be screening these documentary episodes throughout the community. So we'll be able to like sit and watch for about a half an hour and then have conversations for the rest of the time about what do people see? How does this play out in their lives? What does it look like in their neighborhood or in their community? And then what do people think that they can do as individuals or a community to address those issues?
So it's really using the movie as a springboard, as a motivator for the conversation. That's an idea. One of the things that we've talked about in a couple different contexts on this show is that when we are wrestling with public policy and social change stuff, that often one of the pitfalls in trying to engage people is engaging them only in one way, in with written materials or a talking head at the top. But when we look over some of the history of social change, particularly in the country during the Depression, art has always played a role. It's been a communicator, a bridge builder for people. It sounds like in some ways that's what the county's using this film as.
Right. I think so. It's, and what's really nice is that the documentary does a very good job of taking a really complex issue and addressing it on multiple levels. So not only will you see like a person who's impacted maybe by asthma and, you know, trying to figure out like how do they have healthy housing to minimize their asthma, but you'll also see like how did the community organize so that the folks who are building the housing would consider their health needs as they were moving forward. So it's like you get the individual story, you get the community organizing story, and then in some parts of the documentary, it also, like for the science junkies, gets you into like the cellular level around like maybe what's the impact of chronic stress on the condition of your arteries.
So it's like The Wire for health equity or
maybe
something?
Maybe so, right? We don't have that many seasons, I don't think.
So as I was saying, we want to get this out a couple times. I think there's a lot of our listeners who are going to be interested in an opportunity to participate in the initiative, to see the documentary and get into the conversation. When is this happening?
The dialogues will start happening the first week in March. And so they're in multiple sites. The first screening will be on March 2nd, which is a Sunday in the afternoon at the Gresham Library. But if people want to know what's happening in their neighborhood, what's closest to them, or what different days and times are we screening different parts of the documentary, they can check out our website, which is www.mchealth.org/health equity. And if that is hard for people to find out, they can also find out through their local library. They also have the link, I believe, on the library website. The Multnomah County main page, you know, that should have the link also to the Health Equity Initiative. Ted Wheeler's webpage will have the link to the Health Equity Initiative.
But that's a pretty easy one. www.mchealth.org and then /health equity. All right. And so they begin on March 2nd and then they run through the month. Is it a...
Well, we, because of the way we've been scheduling this out, we're trying to work in different community sites with availability and different things. So we actually will be screening this beginning early March, and then it'll go through early May. And what we also are willing to do is maybe after the big rush of community screenings is to be able to provide community organizations with copies of the documentary.
Oh, cool.
And do some facilitator training for them so people can bring it back to their own communities.
What's the end result? Where are you trying to go with this? And what do you hope some of the outcomes are?
For me, the outcomes would be at the minimum that we start to shift how we think about health in our community so that we understand that policies, social policies, economic policies, education policies, that those are also going to impact our health. And if we can get people thinking about that as they're making decisions, especially our policymakers thinking about that as they're making decisions, I think that's a great accomplishment. I also think that some of what we can accomplish and what we will be looking to partner with other organizations to accomplish is building more policy advocates. It's really interesting because I just came from kind of a pilot dialogue with some healthcare providers, and it was interesting for me to hear that some of the medical care providers were feeling very disempowered about their role in sort of breaking out of the healthcare is, you know, going to change the world kind of status quo. And so it's really interesting to me to think, boy, if, you know, people across all different levels of society started to think about really policy advocacy as a way to improve health, mm-hmm. that really could shift some things. So we are going to focus on doing some policy advocacy trainings and partnering with organizations who do that as well. So I think just re-democratizing local government, you know, making sure that there's that community involvement as we move forward in doing policy development is also one of our big goals.
Well, it's very exciting. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that occur to me as we have this discussion here. I mean, one of the things that we talk about a lot for people who experience homelessness is that life without a home is extraordinarily stressful. It is stressful for your physical health, the chance of being bum bashed or in some other way beaten, even by, you know, security or in the worst case by police officers.
Right.
You know, varying to the life on the streets often involves drug use and being around drug use. But again, oftentimes that's done as a response to this incredible stress that you feel, and it becomes a cycle where then when you're using and you're under stress, the chances that you make a good decision go downhill very quickly. And, you know, it's we had a guest on our last show that said, you know, and oftentimes when you have bad luck, more bad luck follows. And that's sort of what seems almost like a wives' tale type of description of this deeper issue that you're getting at here, that maybe it's not a coincidence that people who seem to have several strikes against them then get several strikes more.
Right. And some of what we're working on is kind of the data piece, which, you know, is not maybe as exciting to everybody. Maybe for public health people, it's a little more exciting. But what we've started to show is that you can look at the same community geographically and see that where there's lower education attainment, where there's lower voter participation, where there's higher mortgage interest rates, that those are the same communities where there are poor health outcomes. So it's true. And I think that the message is that it's not accidental. And mm-hmm. I think that's the important thing. And it's not like, you know, you brought it on yourself, but there is really something going on in our society, in American society, that makes some communities more vulnerable to poor health than others. It's not accidental.
Well, and that's funny because one of the other things I was thinking, I was in coming back from Salem today. I was down there working on some statewide housing policy, and as I was driving back, all of a sudden out of the corner of my eye, I saw a state trooper who was looking for speeders, and I was maybe 3 or 4 miles above the speed limit, but still I had that moment of, uh-oh, is it me? Am I going to get pulled over? Now, when I extrapolate, for me, as a white man, probably what would happen is I'd get pulled over and get a ticket, maybe. Now, if we know that for people of color, getting pulled over by the police could wind up in horrible fashion, we've seen it enough in the headlines that it could even wind up that you get shot at. It could wind up all sorts of things. Imagine the stress you feel when you see that police officer in the rearview mirror. And that's just one little thing that happens during the day. It doesn't even matter if that car actually pulls out behind you. You had that moment just like I did, just worrying about, am I going to get a $45 speed ticket? So it seems like that is in some ways the level of where this discussion is moving, or what are all the different systemic factors that we have that shape the way we experience life and therefore how healthy we can be.
Right. And there's actually a one of the segments of the documentary focuses on the African-American infant mortality rate. And the national data shows that college-educated African-American women actually have worse birth outcomes than high school dropouts who are white. And they what they use that statistic to do is to start talking about what are the health effects of racism. That racism is not just an interpersonal thing, you know, or a civil rights issue. It's a health issue as well. So there's like definitely physical effects that then are passed on generationally. So it does help kind of add more information to the struggle that I think has been going on from a lot of different angles, you know, from an education perspective, from a civil rights perspective, from a housing perspective. And so it's like, you know, now health, I think, needs to get involved in terms of how do we use our voice to support some of the social justice work that's been going on in our community for a long time.
So it sounds like for our listeners out there, whether or not you think like health is the primary issue that you care about, if you're someone who's involved with social organizing or social change around race, around economics, around certainly sounds like homelessness, probably we could go on and talk about all the groups who are experiencing some sort of systemic oppression or being left out. And that's probably a very germane subject for this kind of meeting.
Right. It just brings it home in a different kind of way. And I think the thing is that everybody values health. We all know, you know, we want to be here while we're here. We want to have a decent standard of living while we're here. It's something that is a common value. And I think a lot of people aren't aware that there are differences in health across populations, or they think that it's an individual behavior kind of thing and don't really know that it's really a social issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get that website out again. So if people want to find out more about the Health Equity Initiative and when they can go to one of these screening forums, they should go to the website.
The website is www.mchealth.org and it's /health equity.
Now, is there a phone number that people could call if people wanted more information?
Sure, they can call 503-988-3030.
Okay. And they could just say, I need information about the Health Equity Initiative. Is that your line?
Yeah, it probably will come to me. Or we do have a team of folks who are also working on this. And so it could go to any one of us, but I'm happy to answer people's questions. And you know, we're definitely interested in just having people engage in coming themselves, but also, you know, if they wanted to bring their church or their family or their neighbors or whatever, it just is a really great opportunity to have a conversation about, you know, it's just another way of sort of unpacking what's going on in our society today.
So, again, this is beginning in early March. Would you mind, I know that it's at a lot of different sites. I don't think we should do all the sites and all the dates. Would you mind maybe running through some of the different locations around town so our audience can get a sense of their choices?
Sure. They will be, it's maybe not too many to list, but Downtown Library will be doing brown bags starting Monday, March 3rd, and Gresham Library, well, those will be on Sunday afternoons. We'll be at Midland Library. Those are Monday evenings to catch the after work crowd. And then we have some dates on Saturdays at PCC Cascade and the New Columbia Education Center. So we're trying to make it geographically available for most people.
Now, for people who have young kids that it might not be appropriate for them to sit through the whole time, is there child care available?
We haven't figured out the whole child care piece yet. I think that in some settings we'll be able to provide child care. And I think that if people want to come and their kids can, you know, it's fine for kids to sit and watch if they can, or we can just do it, you know, community style where we just, you know, welcome the kids as well. And we will be providing food because, you know, we're asking people to take time out of their day. And, you know, their time is valuable and we want to value their time and their contributions. So there will be some kind of refreshments at each of the screenings.
Well, this is very exciting. I can tell you already that we're going to want to have you back on the show when we start seeing some of the community response for this. I think that, we've seen when at Hole in the Buck, I say we, it's my host Jay and I. Jay is home tonight. He's not feeling well. So Jay, feel better out there. But when, one of the things is we're very interested on this show at Connecting Stuff. Oftentimes homelessness is an issue that's put in the corner as if it exists just right in a vacuum. And so I think anytime, and I would guess that most of us who are struggling for some sort of social justice, we'll be in a lot better, stronger position if we start seeing the commonality with some of our other folks who are struggling in their own area. So I really applaud this effort and really thank you very much for taking your time this evening.
Well, thank you very much for talking with me, and thanks to Jay for making the connection.
All right. This was Tricia Tillman. We're going to take a break. This is SLP, and the song is Anonymous.
This is Free Speech.
Send me information about these. I do a digital newsletter that goes out to about 1,000.
Radio news for Wednesday, February 13, 2008. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. The Senate debates the definitions of torture and waterboarding. Activists protest Mexican President Felipe Calderon's visit to California. And pro-war protesters try to pressure the city of Berkeley to back down from its stance against military recruiting. Those stories and more, but first, the headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the headlines. The government of...
KBOO is proud media sponsor for the 31st Portland International Film Festival, taking place February 7th through the 23rd at theaters around Portland. The festival opens Thursday, February 7th at the Newmark Theater at Portland Center for the Performing Arts with the Israeli film The Band's Visit, followed by an opening night party in the Portland Art Museum's elegant Field Sunken Ballroom. This year's festival features a broad mix of new international films, visiting artists, shorts, documentaries, and animation. There will also be a showcase of new Pacific Rim cinema from China, South Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Vietnam, and Australia. The full Portland International Film Festival program is available online at www.nwfilm.org. That's the Portland International Film Festival, a presentation of the Northwest Film Center, taking place February 7th through the 23rd.
With a charm life, cut holes, keep away from sharp knife. Of some things that you have heard of, covered from the cold of an absent man, going for a walk to wake up.
Welcome back. This is 90.7 on your FM dial, KBOO, your community radio station. This is the second half of Hole in the Bucket, KBOO's show about housing, homelessness, and poverty. And I'm now joined in the studio by Julie Massa and Israel Bear. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you guys doing this evening?
Great.
Good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for coming in at last minute. So tonight we're going to talk about an issue that's been very much on the minds of those in the Portland housing and homeless community, which is who is going to replace Commissioner Eric Sten. And Julie and Israel are involved with two groups that are going to be sponsoring a forum for the candidates for that position. So why don't we start with Julie, talk a little bit about why it is that this forum is so important, considering that Eric's leaving.
Right. Well, I think many of your listeners know that Eric has been a tremendous leader on both the issues of affordable housing and homelessness. And this is our opportunity to see the people that are running and hear their views on these issues. And if it's okay, I'd like to kind of run down the list of people that are actually running for the seat.
Sure, yes, please.
Okay, so these are the candidates for Commissioner seat number two, Eric's seat. Their names are Tamara DeRitter, Nick Fish, Jim Middaugh, Nick Popenuck, Fred Stewart, and Harold Williams, too. And we're hoping to have all those folks present. There might be one person that isn't able to come, but it's a great opportunity to just hear what they think. And we've come up with some great questions for them as well.
So, Israel, and you work with Street Roots, and you've been paying close attention to Commissioner Sten's term in office. It was a shock when he left. What was your first reaction, or what was the folks at the paper's reaction when they found out Eric was leaving?
Well, I think we were very sad to see Eric go. I think that Eric has been great and vital at being able to recognize and strategize with grassroots movements. And we're very much a grassroots organization to be able to accomplish larger goals. Eric recognized, while particular nonprofit or private interest may be larger in scope for specific programs, that no group alone was going to be able to win the battle. And I think Eric really recognized that you have to level the playing field with the tools that you have to get things accomplished. And that's something that is very important as we move forward in city politics.
I also wanted to add to that. I heard it said recently that Eric set a tone of support on city council around these issues, and I think that's really important for elected officials. And when an official takes a certain interest, you know, in the issue and runs with it, and I think just kind of sets the tone for everyone else. And so I think he did that really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think oftentimes politics is about momentum. You know, it's not just about a good idea or something like that. It's about an idea that has some kind of winning oomph behind it.
Right.
And whether the housing issues he was championing, he always was someone who put the oomph behind it. So as we look forward to these candidates who are running to for Eric's open seat, how can the community find out who we're going to vote for? That's a leading question, right? Because the segue is you guys are hosting a candidates forum.
Right, and the forum takes place on February 21st from noon until 1:30 at the First Unitarian Church. And for those of you who don't know exactly where that is, it's 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. And I'll just go over the groups that have put this together. It's a broad base of groups, and I think what's really exciting is that it's homelessness providers and also affordable housing providers that have come together. And the groups are a Community Alliance of Tenants, Community Development Network, Street Roots, Sisters of the Road, Coalition for Homeless Families, Affordable Housing Now, Join. And so I think we're working together, and I think it's going to be really exciting. These are the key stakeholders on these issues, so to have them putting this together and working together is really exciting.
Now, is this event going to be open to the public? Does it cost money to get in?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's going to be open to the public. We hope as many people as possible will be able to come. I think the issues that we'll be talking about, a lot of coverage that you see around the issue of homelessness in a lot of press in Portland tends to stay on the face of homelessness itself, and I think it's a chance for the community to be able to come and look at a much broader, complex set of issues and where the candidates lie on those issues.
And it's a free event.
It's absolutely free.
Absolutely free, okay.
And anyone can come in. I think it's really important to have a huge turnout because we want to show these candidates that Portland cares about these issues, and the more people there, the better. So please come.
And so when the 21st, that's a week from tomorrow.
Right.
It's going to be noon downtown, First Unitarian Church. So a great for all of you out in the listening audience. If you work downtown, see if you can take an extended lunch break. If you follow this show, this is going to be a crucial moment in Portland's history as we start to wrestle with who is going to step in Eric's shoes. And those are big shoes to fill. So talk to me a little bit about, I assume in a candidates forum, these candidates are going to get some questions. Talk a little bit about the issues that you're going to ask these candidates to weigh in on.
Israel, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. Well, I think we've put together a broad set of questions from the diverse groups that we have. And I think we'll be looking at questions ranging from obviously affordable housing and homelessness, but more specifically to where the 30% set aside will lie and how that's being implemented and enforced in city politics. We'll be looking at criminalization issues. We'll be looking at quality of rent, just a myriad of different questions around the issues.
Mm-hmm. And most of the groups, you know, folks within the groups really had input in these questions. So I think people can be confident that, you know, we just cast the net wide to really get input and feedback on the questions.
Now, will this be the type of event? Will it be a debate? Will the audience members be able to ask questions?
I think we're still we're still working that out. What we're thinking about right now is having the questions that we have, because we've already asked them these questions, and that's part of the qualification for participating is answering the questions. And by the way, we're going to make sure that the answers are available to everyone that comes to the forum, and we're going to put them on the Community Development Network's website so that people can come in and see how people answered. So
excellent.
I think it's great. Yeah.
Excellent. And that website is?
www.cdnportland.org.
So I work at CDN Portland, too, for a listening audience who knows that. And I was joking with Julie beforehand. It's always fun to interview a coworker. You get to act extra dumb.
Exactly.
So
anyway, back
okay,
to...
I'm sorry. Yes.
No, that's
so
okay.
The answers will be up on the website probably sometime after the 21st.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The other piece is that... we'll probably have a moderator. We're still waiting to hear who will moderate, but I think that's going to be key, and that person would be asking the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And that we are exploring having a free-for-all at the end, kind of asking questions, you know, audience asking questions at the end. So I think that would be a great format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's also important to note that we're doing we're trying really hard to bring a broad base of individuals to the forum itself. We're not just talking about administrators or policy wonks and things of that nature. We're talking about trying to get people who are on the streets, people in low-income housing, people that are being affected by these issues, to be able to be a part of something special so that, you know, I think oftentimes when these events happen, oftentimes politicians get to be able to kind of, you know, work with the individuals that provide those specific services. But it's really important for us to have the people there that are affected so that they can meet them face to face and be able to answer the questions that matter most.
Now, without getting into talking about any of the specific candidates, as you've invited the collection of these candidates to the forum and presented them with the questions. In general, what have people's responses been? Are people enthusiastic to jump in and talk about the issue?
Yeah, most of the responses I've received are that they're excited to have an opportunity to weigh in, and most of them want to know when's the latest I can get my questions in, because I think they really want to research the questions and make sure they, you know, they cover it all.
I think one of the real benefits of that we all experience with Eric on the city council is not only was he a person who was committed from his heart, but he also knew a lot in his head about the intricacies of housing policies. Some of this is very, very complex stuff. When you were crafting the questions, did the questions get down to that level of complexity, or are they more to gauge where people's hearts at?
I think we tried to drive down deep. I think that there's questions that look at the very complex systems around affordable housing and how to obtain the amount of funding that's needed to be able to create that affordable housing and to end homelessness. We also asked some very tough questions around specific issues that would allow candidates to be able to really give the community the opportunity to find out where they stand on very specific issues. So I think there's a pretty broad base that drives down deep into the core issues that we're talking about while also being able to provide different policy positions on different things.
The other thing is, as nonprofits, we need to be very careful. There are guidelines for holding candidate forums, and we did research on, you know, the kinds of questions that we could ask and be very careful about not leading. And so we looked into that.
So a well-planned, legitimate event. Wow. Out of the housing and homelessness community, no less. What a day. No, one of the things that interests me as we go forward with this type of debate and forum is that it's impossible to know what an elected official is going to be like until they're in office. And oftentimes in these debates, you get a chance to see where people are from. But what kind of, I'm struggling exactly with the question here, but what kind of expectations do you all have? What do you see as the ideal person to come in and fit this? You know, what should the right candidate look like?
Do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I think it's important that we have an advocate for affordable housing and homelessness at City Hall that understands the dynamics and the complexities of the issues. You know, on one hand, you have a 10-year plan in homelessness that's currently captured the public's ear and garnered a vested interest in a wide variety of community partners. At the same time, you've had a federal government that sold out the people for nearly 25 years and has left the modern-day crisis we call homelessness up to local communities to be able to end. So I think it's important that whoever takes over the BHCD recognizes that these dynamics can be able to navigate. They can be able to navigate a very complex system. You know, you throw NIMBYism and cost and ineffective policies with interest groups that are very much vested in their positions, pushing very hard on both sides. And it gets very complex very quickly, and it's very tricky. And I think that individuals, whoever takes that ticket and gets the ride, has to understand that all of these things has to be able to hold these interest groups together and be able to push forward and be productive, because, you know, it's no easy task in Portland to be able to keep such the wide variety of interest groups at the table working together towards being able to create a positive change in people's lives when we're dealing with the political dynamics that we are. So I think Eric has done a great job at being able to capture a multitude of different voices and be able to work with individuals. And as a candidate running around these issues, I wouldn't take lightly these issues or the fact that they're going to walk into a very, very complex set of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. You know, elected official in Portland was overheard saying that good policy is less important than good elected leaders. And I previously worked at Oregon Food Bank, and I had the opportunity in the advocacy department to lobby and to sit across from a lot of elected officials, and I have to tell you, in the last month, I've spent more time with Eric Sten than I ever did. I had met him previously, but I was so taken by his knowledge and his like you said, his ability to get in and really understand deeply how these things work. And so I guess from personally, I would hope that somebody could do the same thing. And I think our questions will get at that and just encourage folks to dig deep.
You know, I assume that there's a specific question about the 10-year plan. One of the things that we've talked about in many iterations on this show is, and Israel, your comments earlier sort of alluded to this, is what an unwieldy bargain the 10-year plan is. On one hand, working in the homeless and housing community, there couldn't be more welcome news than a widely publicized and embraced effort to, quote, end homelessness. At the same time, it's a very complex policy because it's in some ways been mandated or incented from the federal government while they've been retreating with all their fiscal responsibilities. What kind of question are you going to ask about the 10-year plan?
Yeah, we have right now, I can give you just a little snippet of it if that's
yeah,
okay.
Please.
So the question is, the 10-year plan to end homelessness is going into its fourth year. And then it says, but achieving the goals of the 10-year plan will require significant additional financial investments. How do you propose to generate the funding required to fully achieve these goals for both singles and families? So
getting right down to the money.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. The other thing is, I wanted to just jump back to the set aside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my other expectation for a great candidate to the caliber that Eric.
Before you go into this, just always a little refresher. So for our listeners, the set aside is the advocacy work that was done around urban renewal to take 30% of the urban renewal money that PDC spends and commit it towards affordable housing, which is something that the city, largely with the leadership of Eric Sten, accomplished roughly a year ago. I'm sorry, Julie.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say it's bold leadership that made that happen. And, I mean, we're talking about $163 million over 6 years. And so now we're looking at the implementation, and so we need that same type of leadership to implement that plan that you just described. So, yeah.
So we're going to talk about the 10-year plan, the set-aside. What about, is there going to be questions about the sit-lie ordinance and how that fits in with the city's plans?
We chose not to ask a specific question around a specific policy. We did come up with that there are a number of laws currently in place that are enforced against homeless individuals. What, if anything, will you do to address the civil rights of people experiencing homelessness? I think it's really important when we talk about issues of homelessness that so often we talk of them in the context of what we can provide for individuals. And it's very important for us as a community to recognize that individual civil rights are very important and are, you know, more or less stripped away at times when you're experiencing homelessness on the streets. So, you know, it's important for us to be able to have individuals that understand the complexity of when you're experiencing the trauma of being homeless, you're also experiencing the realities of bad policies that oftentimes continue to contribute to a person's homelessness. So,
yeah, I think one of the things that strikes me.
I hope I didn't answer the question there.
Yeah, you candidates, if you're out there listening, taking notes, you're one smart cookie. You tuned into the right radio show. Now,
research.
Yeah, research. One of the things that strikes me about civil rights and why the civil rights laws are so important as a baseline is that, especially in the local politics, and I don't mean local in terms of plays, I mean local in terms of immediate political decisions that people have to make, there's often going to be pressures on elected officials to do things like cut away at certain rights, liberties, et cetera. Because of the homeless community often being in the shadows of our society, a lot of that's already happened. is there any, I mean, I know you already read the question, but, you know, not just talking about the debate, but talking about the next candidate, what is there going to be some kind of push with the existing city council to get folks to think about these larger civil rights issues?
Well, you know, the trend has been in the past few years to basically offer the carrot and stick approach to the idea of providing direct services and somehow working with providers and advocates to create an atmosphere where if we provide X, Y, and Z, then can you give on A, B, and C? And I think that's an issue that's not going away anytime soon. And I think if anything, it's going to continue to be magnified in the future because more and more you're hearing terminology from individuals not only in Portland but in urban cores around the country that say, well, if we are able to provide a place for homeless individuals, then it shouldn't really be a problem if we ask homeless individuals not to exist in a public space. So that's an issue that's not going away. And if not worked at if not worked with in a way that you can work with a broad base of groups to be able to figure out solutions to this, it's a problem that could spin out of control very quickly. And, you know, I think in Portland we tend to think that the dynamics between different interest groups are tense. But if you look to our sister cities in Seattle and San Francisco, they're nowhere near as intense as they are in those cities. So I think that we want to be able to work in a way that's collaborative, in a way that's moving forward. But at some point, civil rights are something that every individual on the streets deserves, like anybody else. And so we can't let the idea of providing services or somehow addressing homelessness be substituted for actual civil rights.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's for our listeners out there, let's make sure we get this information out again. So, again, I've been talking to Julie Massa and Israel Baer. We are talking about a candidates forum for city council seat number 2, the seat that has been occupied quite well by Eric Sten. That the debate is going to be
February 21st from 12 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. at First Unitarian Church, and that's 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland.
And if people have questions about the debate or want to find out more information, is there some contact?
Yes, they should contact me. And the number at Community Development Network is 503-335-9884. And then you can also email me at julie@cdnportland.org.
And you can also buy a Street Roots on the back page of Street Roots this issue. There's a full page poster or ad for the forum itself. So you can support your vendor and find out all the great information to go to the forum.
Yeah, particularly if there's any candidates who are tuning in, taking notes, buy yourself a copy of Street Roots. You'll be ahead of everybody else.
Absolutely.
The other thing that I wanted to, it's just a tiny point, it's a brown bag luncheon. So if you are going there for lunch, you should bring something to eat.
Absolutely.
Okay. It's a small point, but I know that some people will be there with food. And if you came and you're hungry and your stomach's grumbling, sometimes that makes it hard to concentrate. So maybe a closing plug for why people should show up to this forum?
Well, I just think it, in a lot of ways, this term's used a lot, but I think it's a historical moment in the idea that so often homeless advocates or providers and affordable housing advocates are working for the same goals in two different arenas. And I think for the first time, we are showing our strength in a way that we're all working on these same issues. We're all on the same side of the fence, and we're building power within our community to show that not only should you be paying attention to these issues, but you should be putting these issues as a priority when you get in office.
All right. It's great having you guys on the show. Listeners, I hope you're all going to make it. That's next Thursday, the 21st, noon to 1:30, First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland. Thank you for tuning in tonight to KBOO's Hole in the Bucket. Sean, if you want to take us away with the closing music, good evening, and we will talk to you in a month.